Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 17th of November 2017. Extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Maria Head.
Good morning.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Farah Williams. The main headlines this week are Olympic size ice rink plan revealed, leisure centre vote slammed, and council officer tells residents road closure is going ahead. So, please, can we have the story behind the first headline, Maria?
Olympic-sized ice rink plan revealed. Plans for the first permanent Olympic-sized ice arena and curling rink in Winchester have been revealed. A privately funded $20 million mixed-use development proposed by Ethos Development Limited would transform the old depot site at Bar End. As well as the ice arena, the proposal includes a 120-bed hotel, restaurant, coffee house and convenience store. There would also be 10-pin bowling and indoor caving featured within the arena development. The project is supported by Olympic champions and Dancing on Ice stars Torval and Dean and Robin Cousins. Those behind the development plan to use environmentally friendly technology in the design, which will not only make the site self-sufficient in power use, but will also provide the new leisure centre, due to be built adjacent to the depot site, with sufficient power to heat the swimming pools and buildings. Edna Bowden from the Winchester Ice Sport Association said, "It's completely privately funded. It will not cost the taxpayer anything. As it's planned next to the proposed new leisure centre at Bar End, it will work as a heat exchange. Heat generated by cooling the ice rink can be used to heat the leisure centre. It should save the council around £200,000 in running costs. It's really good for the city. I just hope the councillors will look favourably on it. The new facility will provide Winchester with its first permanent ice rink and will be the only Olympic-sized arena on the south coast. When asked whether the planned permanent ice rink would impact on the annual temporary facility, which runs in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral alongside the Christmas market, Ms. Bowden said, "One enhances the other. Places like London have four or five. It will only enhance Winchester. If approved, the permanent ice rink would also bring Olympic curling to the south as the first purpose-built four-lane curling ring in England. The plans were due to be presented at Winchester City Councillors at the Town Forum meeting at Winchester Guildhall on Wednesday." And there is an artist's impression of the ice rink. And standing in front of that, the very famous dancers, Torval and Dean.
Leisure centre vote slammed. Councillors have slammed a decision to approve an 8-court sports hall at Winchester's new sports and leisure centre after the planned facilities were agreed. Winchester City Council's cabinet voted to build an 8 rather than a 12-court facility at the new leisure centre set to be built in Bar End, the same number as in the current River Park Leisure Centre, which it will be replacing. Cabinet members defended the plan, saying that the research indicated that an 8-court hall would be sufficient and meet the Sport England's requirements. At the meeting held earlier this week, councillors signed off the plans for the facilities of the £37 million leisure centre, which will include an Olympic-sized That's a 50-metre swimming pool that could be separated into two smaller pools, a learner pool and a water play area, in addition to the sports hall. The new centre will also have a clip and climb facility, four squash courts, a hydrotherapy suite and eight treatment rooms, two large studios, a spin studio and a 200-station gym. Council has added there would be a flexible space that could be used as a creche or a soft play area and a cafe. Criticising the plans, Lib Dem City Councillor Eleanor Bell said, "The whole point is an 8-court hall will only give us room for one football court, whereas 12 courts would give us two. We're building for the future. The idea is that we could expand later, but everybody knows that adding to a building later would cost more." Conservative Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who didn't attend the meeting, also slated the decision. He said, "Cabinet's decision to proceed on the basis of a smaller sports hall than was previously approved is immensely disappointing. It is important, however, that this does not become a party political battle." But Cabinet members defended the decision to only include an 8-court sports hall, highlighting research by Sport England consultant. The Cabinet report said, "The current River Park Leisure Centre has an 8-court hall. However, it is not compliant with Sport England guidance and is effectively the equivalent of a 6-court hall. The work commissioned to develop a, quote, sports facility needs assessment for the district has shown that there is an oversupply of sports halls. An 8-court hall as part of the sports development would meet the requirements. The proposed 8-court sports hall will be a larger space than the existing provision at River Park." Speaking after the Cabinet meeting, Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for Health and Wellbeing, said, "We recognise that the current leisure centre is at the end of its useful life, and in its present state its facilities don't offer the type of experience that we should be able to expect. This landmark decision to progress the new development will address this. We need to look to the future. And having listened to the public and taken on board advice from experts, we're confident that we can create better facilities that offer a broad range of leisure opportunities for the district's communities." And that article is accompanied by another artist's impression of what our spiffy new Bar End Leisure Centre might look like.
Just think of all the Olympic facilities we'll have.
I know. Council officer tells residents road closure is going ahead. The closure of a busy Winchester Road as part of a major housing development is set to go ahead as planned, says Winchester City Council. As reported in the Chronicle, Hampshire's Transport Chief Councillor, Rob Humby, said the County Council would be prepared to review the future of Andover Road following the launch of the consultation over the Winchester Movement Strategy. But at the Barton Farm Forum, it was confirmed that at the moment the closure is set to go ahead as planned. The planned closure of Andover Road, a major route in and out of the city to the north, was announced as part of the Barton Farm housing development, also known as King's Barton. Patrick Davis of the City of Winchester Trust told the meeting that there was, quotes, "confusion in the public mind," close quotes, as to the road's future. Corporate Director of Winchester City Council, Steve Tilbury, said Keller Homes, the developer, had no choice but to implement the diversion of the road as it was a planning condition for the development. He said, "The County Council, as Highways Authority, always keeps under review the management of the roads. If Hampshire County Council want a different road network, it would have to be agreed with Keller Homes. I don't think there is any basis for confusion. If there are different facts that need to be taken into account, Hampshire County Council will look at that." Mike Tuzzi of Andover Road said, "Our view is that we do want the diversion to take place because of the way the road junction is being formed. Not everyone is in support of retaining the existing Andover Road."
The forum also heard that work is underway to complete Phase 1B, which includes 89 affordable homes, comprising of 52 low-cost shared ownership and 37 affordable properties, delivered by Housing Association VIVID, or VIVID. Leader of Winchester City Council and portfolio holder for housing, Councillor Caroline Horrell, said, "I am delighted to see residents move into affordable homes at King's Barton. It demonstrates our commitment to ensuring our residents have a better choice of housing, a key element of the new housing strategy." Lib Dem Councillor Kelsey Lerney asked how much the project's timetable for completion had slipped, and Implementation Officer Chris Hughes confirmed the project was a year behind schedule, adding, "We do not intend on slowing down." In a statement, the City Council confirmed King's Barton is expected to be completed by 2026.
Here are the death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Barden, Peter Barden, peacefully at home, aged 88. Houghton, Tom Houghton, at home, aged 79. King, Derek Arthur Raymond King, after a staunch fight against illness. Lee, Peter James Lee, aged 71. Light, John, or Ron, Light, at home, aged 86. MacLeod, Marion MacLeod, née Piper, aged 91. North, John North, at Countess Mountbatten Hospice after a long battle with Parkinson's. Swaffield, Kim Swaffield, née Blackwell, peacefully after a short illness. Veer, Alice May Veer, at home, aged 89. And Wolford, Gladys Wolford, aged 98. And now, in place of Christian comment this week, we have a letter, I believe, from the front in the First World War.
Yes.
Is that right, Maria?
Yes, it is. And it's from Ted Squire. "My dear Helen, your birthday. Many happy returns. It's a long time since I have had the pleasure of remembering your birthday. I trust that you are keeping well. I should love to see you and have a quiet talk. How many things there are to distract our attention from the things that really matter. We are so often and so easily deceived by the newspapers and the excited friends and acquaintances around us. However serious may be the situation in France, if we attach overwhelming importance to it, it only reveals to us the falseness of our grounds of confidence. We are trusting to our army and our physical strength, but only humanly speaking. If our ultimate confidence rests upon human success, and if our faith does not rest on someone deeper, we shall not be steady in a crisis. We shall get alarmed. These critical days are a real test to each of us. If we believe in God, then logically we must believe that He has a purpose in all these critical events. If we believe that God's purpose will best be served by our victory in the field, we fight on till the last and refuse the thought of defeat because our duty is clear. Anyone whose habit it is to let his faith rest on God himself and his personal love will retain a trust. In spite of the worst disasters in national affairs or the most overwhelming sorrow and tragic loss in our own personal affairs. By this, I do not mean a perpetual smile upon everybody, but something which is there when severe tests come along, something unshakable when every prop seems to have gone. When I began this letter, I did not mean to write all this, but as my attention concentrated upon you, you drew it out of me. You are one of the few people to whom I write who does this, and that is friendship. It is a satisfying joy to speak to someone of the deepest things. It is the communion of the spirit, I suppose. Your loving brother, Ted. There is a picture of Ted with this very moving letter. He was named Charles Edward, but known as Ted, and was the ninth child of 17. Before the war, he gained his triple blue at Cambridge in 1910 in soccer, cricket and boxing. So he was quite an athlete. He went on to be ordained priest, serving as a missionary in India and Nigeria. He was also a headmaster on the Isle of Wight and then a parish priest in Kent and Norfolk.
Right, and now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter's read by John.
Yes, and this refers back to one of our headline pieces. It's entitled Rat Run. Sir, I cannot understand the rationale behind the decision to close Andover Road. It certainly can't be to enhance the lives of residents on the newly built Barton Farm, and it could create major problems for traffic flow in week. Has any thought been given or are measures being taken to minimise the increased traffic which will result from northbound drivers turning left into Stony Lane and then right into Berwick Avenue in order to rejoin Andover Road in Hairstock? Accidents already occur with depressing regularity at the Stony Lane Berwick Avenue crossroads. Of course, this also applies in reverse, particularly when there's been an accident on the A34 or M3 and all southbound traffic switches to Andover Road. Traffic has already increased considerably along Stony Lane with the opening of Aldi and Waitrose, and it can only worsen once people move into Barton Farm's development. To allow Berwick Avenue and Prior's Dean Road to become a rat run is in nobody's interest. And that's from B. Fell, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
Now, this letter comes from Tommy Geddes. Sir, Councillor Ron Humby is a good and honourable man, so I was disappointed to read that he is stoking his fellow Tory Paul Twelvetree's populist campaign to overturn the decision to close Andover Road as part of the Barton Farm development. That matter was consulted on ad nauseam years ago. Closing the road is absolutely central to the design and eventual success of this new suburb, ensuring it is integrated into the city and lively. There were good urban planning, environmental and safety reasons for diverting traffic through the new estate that resulted in the decision being made in the teeth of opposition from the same people who are now trying to resurrect the issue. Changing that at this stage would undermine the entire development. The new road will indeed mean that the people of South Wanston take a minute or two longer to drive into the city centre. And yes, when the A34 or M3 is closed, no doubt some of the additional traffic will seep through Hairstock. To declare a vested interest, it will no longer thunder past my house in the night. The closure affords some compensation to those of us with homes bordering Andover Road who can no longer look over countryside. I can't justly be accused of NIMBYism, however, as I was and remain fully in support of Barton Farm. Motorists should expect to reduce their speed, and the new road, which is already being built, is designed to make that happen, providing a safe environment for pedestrians and cyclists, while keeping the traffic flowing. It is a small price to pay for the desperately needed housing. Councillor Humby knows all this perfectly well, and he should not be encouraging Mr. Twelvetree in his raising of false expectations. And that's from Tommy Geddes, Stony Lane, Winchester.
And here's yet another letter about the Andover Road by Sue Webb. Sir, further to my letter to the Chronicle of September the 7th, I say again that it is madness to reroute the Andover Road through the new housing estate at Barton Farm. It should not be closed and returned to nature, as some pious person has said. Have any of our councillors actually seen the amount of traffic that uses Andover Road? Not just cars, but motorbikes, lorries and buses as well. Can you imagine that volume of traffic grinding its way past houses in what could be a comparatively rural setting? Before an irrevocable step is taken, think about the A303 and the chaos brought about by closing a road and putting in a roundabout where there are few houses, so the school run doesn't come into the equation. Sue Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
This letter comes from Councillor Eileen Berry, entitled Unacceptable. Sir, it has occurred to me that Winchester is at its biggest transition for at least 100 years. We're moving into territories of change with Silver Hill, Station Approach, Chettle Street, Bar End, new student accommodation and Sir John Moore Barracks, to name but a few. I've no problem with this, provided we learn from past mistakes. But there is another side to this coin. Isn't it time that we considered wherever ordinary working class people live, that their needs and basic essentials are looked after? Take, for example, Week. We have Waitrose, Aldi, a pharmacy and doctors. But what we haven't got is parking. This is the bread and butter of ordinary people's living requirements. We're becoming complacent. We're seeing the big picture of all these huge developments, but we're forgetting the need of each environment. We also mustn't forget that there are people trying to make their living. In Week, local development is non-stop, so we have extra people living within the area, and that means extra cars. We don't seem to understand that we have to try and accommodate the parking. Some of us are content, some of us are affluent, but there are an awful lot of good, hard-working people that are not, and I'm concerned about the have-nots. Let's remember, as we come close to the festive time, that we should be looking towards our neighbours who may be in need. Money's being spent in the millions towards a city to be proud of, but not on those who ask for nothing. The contrast is completely unacceptable. And Councillor Berry lives in Priorsdean Road in Hairstock.
And this letter comes from Mrs. P. Dolly. Sir, on October the 30th, I was unfortunate enough to be taken by ambulance to A&E with breathing problems. This happens quite often, as I have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and must have oxygen and nebulizers to enable me to breathe. There was no consultant in A&E, but there were students, and after having some oxygen, I was told I could go home. When I asked for transport, I was told I would not qualify for transport, and it was suggested I went home on the bus. I had only my pyjamas with me. I am 82 years old, live on my own, and still couldn't breathe properly when I started to walk. I have been in hospital several times, and when my consultant sees me, she will not let me go home until my chest is clear and I can walk without breathing problems. Whatever has happened to our NHS? The money myself and others have paid in has gone willy-nilly to people who have not paid a penny. Very poor management by government yet again. Not very good treatment by the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. That comes from Mrs. P. Dolly, Braxton House, Winnall, Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Councillor Keith Manns. Sir, I was disturbed by Miss Stevens' assertion that we have plucked a figure for reducing the number of children coming into care by 410, and her view that those children will be deprived of care, cut, November the 2nd. Unfortunately, Miss Stevens has completely misunderstood what we are setting out to achieve. Our transformation proposals for safely reducing the number of children in care are based on our fundamental belief that what is best for children is for them to remain living with and being looked after by their parents whenever they can be, that can be made possible. Bringing a child into care should be the very last resort. It is true that for a variety of reasons, sometimes families find themselves in difficulty, and this can have negative impact on the health and well-being of their children. With the right support from us, those families are often able to get themselves onto a more stable footing, and in those situations, there is no need for children to come into care. As one of the few authorities to be one of the government's Partners in Practice Innovations Programme, we are working to change social work practice in Hampshire to ensure that, with the resources we have available, we can do more to support those families who are struggling to cope, and to do so at the earliest stage before their situation starts to escalate out of control. In addition, our successful Supporting Families programme has indicated that this is the right way forward. It is on this basis that we believe it is realistic to forecast that, over the next few years, the number of children needing to come into care would be fewer than is the case currently. Without question, any child that we identify as being at risk will always be supported, and if it becomes necessary, action will be taken to ensure that they come into care. Councillor Keith Manns, Executive Lead Member for Children's Services and Deputy Leader Children's Services, Hampshire County Council, Winchester.
Heritage and art for Silver Hill 2. Sir, what an excellent article Joanna Lewis concocted in last week's Chronicle, entitled Silver Hill 2's Soggy Bottom. I couldn't agree more with her remarks. The present bus station site is ideal for a museum incorporating the Anglo-Saxon experience, similar to the Viking experience in York. There's so much to unearth here concerning the Saxons. In addition, a modern art gallery and a concert hall could easily be incorporated into this site. The council have only briefly scraped the surface on these issues. Shops, housing and cafes are, I believe, incorporated into the procedure. This is unnecessary. We have enough empty shops, and this is not the area for housing, affordable or otherwise. To city councillors, I say, please think again before it's too late. And that letter comes from Phil Yates, who lives in Tower Street in Winchester.
This letter comes from Carol Stevens. Sir, I was amazed at the attitude of some of the pensioners reported in your paper last week. They grudge 50 pence per ride, but I suspect they pay something near £2.50 for a cup of tea or coffee when they arrive at their destination. I am not complaining about the folk on straitened means. They should have a free bus pass. But I have friends who think it is funny to take their car to another county, paying nothing towards its upkeep, and ride around for a week for free, leaving their car at the roadside. This is not what was intended. The friends have substantial funds at their disposal and can well afford a modest contribution to keep the service running, but they think it is their right to travel for free. They don't seem to realise that in 10 years' time, when they can no longer drive, there will be no bus service. Then they will learn what isolated really means. We do not apply for a rail or bus pass because we travel by car, but there will come a day when we can no longer drive and will be very grateful for the service, however limited. I do hope the Hampshire County Council have their plans approved. I do not understand how reasonably intelligent people seriously think the council has a bottomless pit of money when they are facing savage cuts. These people have obviously never been in business and had to balance the books. And that comes from Carol Stevens, Grosvenor Gardens, Southampton.
And the next very succinct letter comes from Rich Moss. Sir, with reference to your article, Shoppers Given a Scare at Brooks, Chronicle November 2nd, It is not just Halloween. The Brooks has scared everyone since it opened in 1991. Rich Moss, Berwick Avenue, Week.
And that concludes the letters. And so we move to the historical news, starting with 200 years ago. And John, please.
Yes, Monday, November the 17th, 1817. A rather grisly story, I'm afraid. On Friday, a wretched-looking female was brought to the Mansion House on a charge which would disgrace the rudest barbarian of any age or country. Mrs. Allen, a respectable-looking woman living in St. Mary's Le Grand, stated that on last Camberwell Fair Day, her little daughter, a child of only 9 years of age, was sent by her to the Fleet Market, from which, not returning in the expected time, a search was made. The child did not return until 12 o'clock the following night, when she was brought home by a friend of Mrs. Allen's. It appeared from the story told by her on her return, and partly from the evidence of a police patrol, that she had been met by the prisoner, who allured her to Camberwell Fair, where she detained her all the following day. On the way home, the prisoner was met by a man who had previously had some conversation with her at the fair. He gave some money to the child and also to the prisoner, after which they took the infant into an adjoining field. The prisoner then left her to the savage ruffian. The shrieks and cries of the helpless little creature reached the ears of a passing police patrol who was passing at the time, but he only arrived in time enough to take one of the monsters, the woman, in custody. The other escaped. I'm sorry to say the second story isn't a lot more cheerful. Mr. Tidy, a respective inhabitant of Southgate in Middlesex, met his death on the 5th of November in a very unexpected manner. It appeared that Mr. Tidy had been out with his carriage and had reached Southgate on his return, and while walking by the side of the vehicle, the discharge of some squibs by a number of children who were playing with them on the green by the roadside frightened Mr. Tidy's horse, which suddenly turned round and went off at a fast gallop. And whether the horse or the carriage struck the deceased could not be ascertained, but he was shortly afterwards discovered by the roadside. He was attended immediately by a surgeon, who found him labouring for breath. He died in about half an hour. Sorry.
Oh, dear. Right, now we come to 100 years ago.
Saturday, November the 17th, 1917. Sitting as a children's court, the magistrates had before them a boy who was summoned for wilfully breaking a pane of glass in a pavilion at the recreation ground and doing damage to the extent of 5 shillings. He pleaded guilty. The town's clerk, Mr. T. Holt, addressing the bench, said he was here only a few weeks ago with regard to breaking glass in the recreation ground, but the decision of the magistrates did not seem to have stopped the window breaking. This boy, with others, were playing football and kicked the ball into the new pavilion and broke a pane of glass. What could be done to put a stop to this, he did not know. The magistrates had no authority to have the boys birched. He had been there 3 times within the last 3 to 4 weeks for the same things, but boys did not seem to have learnt any lesson. The Girl Guides in Coldon Common have just celebrated their 5th birthday. The company now number 29, including 3 officers. There are 4 first-class guides and 3 with all-round cords and 134 proficiency badges in the company. During the past year, the guides have collected waste paper, which has been sold in aid of the Shawford Hospital Supply Depot, and also made limb pillows for the same. They spent one afternoon picking up chestnuts at Twyford House. Their captain, Mrs. Etta Campbell, is a regular worker at the Shawford Depot, so that's 2 rather contrasting pieces.
And moving forward, 50 years ago, Saturday, November the 18th, 1967, and there are 2 pieces. Although doubts have been raised on the validity in the modern world of Poppy Day and the services of remembrance, there is no sign that the move for change has struck very deeply in the towns and villages of Hampshire. People may no longer stand still in their place. factories no longer shut off machinery, and traffic no more comes to a halt when 11 o'clock strikes on the 11th day of the 11th month. Yet remembrance of the dead and the wounded of two world wars still has its place with the great majority of people of the older generation. So it has been again this year, with throughout the county a response as generous as ever to the poppy sellers of the British Legion, large congregations in the churches on Remembrance Sunday, and war memorials in town and village carrying as many wreaths as ever. And the second piece, opening a Christmas fair in aid of Women's Work Methodist Missionary Society in Winchester on Wednesday, Mrs. W.J. Carpenter-Turner said that historians could not be anything but alarmed by certain aspects in some emergent countries. What had happened in Africa and what might well happen in China has taught Christians valuable lessons. They had to do their very best to help overseas Christians, and if that had been done in Africa earlier, current political and historical problems would not exist. The immediate way was to give money at the fair. Money is the insurance project for the happiness and safety of the world in the future. A bouquet was presented to Mrs. Carpenter-Turner by Yvonne Spinney, daughter of the Reverend and Mrs. Brian Spinney.
And here we are at Friday, November the 13th, 1992, 25 years ago. A group of young people from the Winchester area are taking part in a peer training project about drugs misuse during European Drug Prevention Week. The Drug Week, which starts on Monday, aims to raise awareness of the dangers of drug misuse and provide help and advice for those with problems. The Community Drugs Advice Service and the Hampshire County Youth Service have organised a residential weekend for young people to develop a peer training team. The team will receive information about drug issues and will then return to the communities where they live in order to help influence the attitudes of their peers. And a final brief piece. Lecturers at King Alfred's College have welcomed a pay settlement which removes the threat of performance-related pay. Agreement was reached last Friday following a one-day strike by the National Association of Teachers in Further and Higher Education last Wednesday, when 200 lecturers and students marched through the streets of Winchester. Lecturers will now receive a 3.9% pay increase, backdated to September the 1st.
We move on to editorial comment with Daphne, please.
Leisure Centre vote a big blow to some. This week saw members of Winchester City Council's Cabinet approve the facilities at the planned new Leisure Centre for Bar End, which, controversially to some, included an 8-court sports hall rather than 12. As you can see from our page 2 article, which has already been read, this drew criticism from both Tory and Lib Dem councillors, who argued that for the sake of £50,000 a year, the new sports centre would be able to fit in more sports clubs during the peak post-work hours. Cabinet members defended the plans, citing research, saying that the 8-court option would be preferable, as with 12 courts, the council would be paying for facilities that are full during short periods while the demand falls away for the rest of the day. For a council looking to create a state-of-the-art new leisure centre, replacing the current one in River Park, it is understandable that some people view this latest decision as a big blow. This week also saw plans revealed to build a permanent Olympic-sized ice rink near to where the leisure centre will go, which could save the council up to £200,000 a year towards the running costs. One question which should be asked of the council is whether this potential saving factored into the sports hall decision, and if not, surely Cabinet should reconsider whether the funds make a 12-court sports hall a more viable option.
And we go over to John, please, for first person.
Yeah, first person this week is brought to us by Khalid Aziz. And as usual with Khalid, he doesn't pull any punches. He entitles his piece, Making It Up on the Hoof. So, fake news is the new word, or strictly speaking, words of 2017, according to Collins, the dictionary people. We've always been keen to latch on to new words or sayings. Many think it confers so-called coolness on the user, but often it just makes you cringe. A few years back, some took to using the single word bless as a shorthand for bless him or her whenever someone wanted to suggest they empathised with someone else's situation or action. But to me, it always sounded creepy and condescending. Thus it is with the expression fake news. Why does US President Donald Trump use it when railing against the media? Well, perhaps it's because in the inner workings of what passes for his brain, there is just a shred of moral decency. What, you might ask? Well, it goes like this. There are more than enough adequate words already available when challenging a media assertion you don't like or don't agree with. How about words like untrue or even lies? But to say something is untrue, you leave yourself open to having to prove it and or to come up with the truth, which, as you know, is where Trump struggles. Deep within his psyche, he must be aware that he cannot necessarily disprove what's being said, and because of his personality defect, he's pathologically unable to lay himself open to argument, so he reverts to slogans. After all, that's what got him elected in the first place. From lock her up to drain the swamp. Slogans work with those unprepared or unable to exercise their own minds to reach their own conclusions. And so we have fake news. A better candidate for Collins' word of the year might have been post-truth. For surely that's where we are now, thanks to the current leader of the free world. But Trump hasn't invented anything new. For years, politicians have been adept at creating new words and phrases either to mask what they really mean or to get round parliamentary rules. For example, you cannot, as a member of parliament, accuse a fellow honourable member of telling a lie. But instead you can say, I believe the honourable member has uttered a terminological inexactitude. Different words, but the same meaning. Some try inventing new words on the hoof. Michael Gove, generally speaking a Marmite politician, thought he was on safe ground when he summoned up an elegant piece of word smithery around the Harvey Weinstein revelations. He raised a hearty laugh from a live audience when he compared being interviewed on Today by John Humphreys as being akin to entering Harvey Weinstein's bedroom. The ensuing condemnation by a chorus of right-on critics probably scotched the chances of a Weinstein moment entering the lexicon as a descriptor of a time and place you'd rather not be. Probably too complicated a connection anyway. But, hey-ho, these days no one has barely more than 15 minutes of scandalous fame anyway. Weinstein's already been shoved aside from the limelight by others. Step forward for a moment, Sir Michael Fallon, who rather quickly fell on his sword following accusations of sexual impropriety. He went swiftly and relatively cleanly from Theresa May's point of view, and now the sniper sights of the sex police are to be trained on none other than Damien Green, who, to all intents and purposes, is the Deputy Prime Minister. Now, a former Met police chief has confirmed that he knew a decade ago of, quote, legal pornography being found on Mr. Green's parliamentary computer. Well, legal it may have been from Mr. Green's point of view, but it was the equivalent of a teenager having his porn magazine stash discovered by his mum. A tad uncomfortable. And by the time you read this, Mrs. May might be having to find a replacement First Secretary of State.
Thank you, John. That noise that you may have heard, did all of you hear it? No? I'm sorry. It came through to my headphones, so I don't know whether it was recorded or not, but it was something on the computer, so ignore it anyway. I'm going to go on to an alternative look at the news, which is Belgarum, and a busy week for festive Kev. It's going to be a busy week for Winchester big issue seller Kevin Colick this week. First up, Kev will be switching Winchester Town's Christmas lights this evening. That, in fact, was Thursday evening at 6 p.m. before popping off to turn the lights on at an event at the Crown and Anchor pub at 7 p.m. Playfully dubbing the Winchester bid-backed event the Big Issue Switch On in a homemade sign promoting the event, tickets are £5 from him in advance and £250 on the gate. However, Kev was quick to point out there is no gate. He said that all proceeds from the event will be going to local charity, Kev's Van Fund, not a registered charity. Seriously, though, Kev said he was looking forward to switching on the lights. It's a privilege and honour to be chosen over so-called normal people. If they give me a fee, I'm going to donate half to charity. Come watch the Winchester Christmas light switch on. There are no tickets. Kevin was joking, and the event is free from 4 p.m. at the Broadway Winchester, but I'm afraid it's already happened. It was an evening of entertainment, including the switch on at 6, and an evening of music and dance, compared by Heart Radio's Rich Clark. And there's a picture of Kevin Colick outside with his big issue and his cardboard advertisements for coming to the Christmas switch on. Mm-hmm. And then we have councillors on tour. Winchester City Council pulled in pretty good numbers for the first stop for their cabinet tour. A way for the council to bring democracy to the masses by making meetings more accessible, the scheme sees Winchester City Council's cabinet leave the usual comfy confines of Winchester Guildhall and travel to different venues across the county. First stop, Solent Hotel in Whiteley. This can only be a good thing for democracy, which was clear at the well-attended meeting, which decided key issues surrounding the building of new sports and leisure facilities in Winchester. Perhaps next time, though, they should consider choosing topics that impact the areas they are travelling to, rather than simply taking Winchester's problems out into the provinces. Still, anything that allows a greater number of people to participate in the democratic process, regardless of local relevancy, can only be a good thing. The next stop on the tour will take in the ARC in Alsford on January the 17th. Here are a few items about things that are going to happen in from a couple of weeks on that you might be interested in. From Monday the 20th of November, that's next Monday, to Sunday, January the 7th, the ice rink in the Cathedral Close is open from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. An hour's session costs £11.50 for an adult, and there are concessions for children. Some sessions are reserved exclusively for parents and toddlers, and bookings are online at www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk. On Tuesday the 28th of November, there's an open meeting on Air Quality Revisited at the John Stripe Studio 2, the University of Winchester, from 7:30 to 9:15 p.m. And it will discuss the design of our towns and our lives to limit reliance on polluting private cars. On Thursday the 30th of November at 6:30 p.m. there'll be a lantern parade starting from the cathedral and processing round the outer close. Make your own lantern and join in this fun family parade. And you can enjoy that Christmas favourite, the ballet The Nutcracker, at the Mayflower Southampton from the 29th of November to the 2nd of December, with matinees on Thursday and Saturday. And the box office number for the Mayflower is 02380 711 811. And we go on to lighting up time, which ends today, Friday the 17th of November, at 7:25 a.m. and begins again at 4:15 p.m. On Wednesday the 22nd of November, it ends at 7:33 a.m. and begins again at 4:09 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we're going to go on with items of general news. Maria.
And the first item is headed War Memorials Protection. More than a dozen Hampshire war memorials have now been given protection after being listed by Historic England. The move comes as part of the body's pledge to protect 2,500 war memorials across the country by 2018, marking the centenary of the end of the First World War. Six memorials in Winchester have been granted listed status, including the King's Royal Rifle Corps War Memorial, which was made a Grade 2 listed site, and the War Cloister at Winchester College, which was listed as Grade 1. Lord Ashton of Hyde, the First World War Minister, said, "As we enter the final year of our First World War centenary commemorations, we want to ensure the bravery and sacrifice of those who served are never forgotten. Local war memorials are a poignant reminder of how the war affected our communities and of those who never came home. I encourage everyone to visit their local memorial and to learn more about their connection to this pivotal point in our history." Duncan Wilson, CEO of Historic England, added, "Researching, recording and recommending up to 2,500 more war memorials for listing over 5 years is a major task, but one that Historic England is proud to undertake." And there are photos of four of the war memorials. There's the Headbourne Worthy War Memorial and the Cheriton War Memorial, the King's Royal Rifle Corps Memorial, which has a bronze statue of a soldier from the First World War holding his rifle, which is beautiful, and the Kingsworthy War Memorial, which is looks like a Celtic cross, I think, and beautiful design with a very intricate pattern.
Fireworks raise nearly £70,000. A major firework display in Winchester sold out for the third year running with more than 20,000 people in attendance. The 59th annual Winchester Roundtable Bonfire and Fireworks event also raised more than £65,000, which will now go towards charities in the local area. Bucket collections on site raised an additional £4,100 to go towards the Joe Glover Trust and Action Hampshire, who will install a defibrillator on Winchester High Street with the money. Steve Cross, the bonfire chairman, said, "It's an honour to bring together the local community and to raise so much money that goes straight back into helping good causes and charities in the Winchester area. Over 200 volunteers made this event a success, and Winchester Roundtable is grateful to everyone who contributed to and supported the event." Steve continued, "Seeing over 20,000 faces lit up by the bonfire and watching one of the most popular displays in southern England ignites our community spirit, and we can't wait to use the profits to make a difference where it really counts." Winchester Roundtable Bonfire and Fireworks event will return next year for the 60th time and will be held on Saturday, November the 3rd.
Quick thinking porter saves life. A quick thinking porter at a Hampshire hospital used CPR to save his colleague's life. John Baldry was just about to start a shift moving patients and vital equipment around the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester when, without any warning, he suffered a cardiac arrest in the staff room. On seeing his friend collapsed on the floor, Daniel Spacania from Eastleigh immediately took control of the situation, instructing another of his colleagues to put in an emergency call before tending to John. Daniel said, "When I put my ear to his face, I could tell he had stopped breathing. I realised he must have had a cardiac arrest and started performing CPR. The adrenaline just kicked in. John is a friend as well as a colleague, and I was determined to keep going." Daniel's initiative kept John alive during the time it took the emergency medical team to arrive on the scene. A defibrillator was used to restart John's heart, and he was treated in the emergency department and intensive care unit at the hospital before being transferred to the specialist coronary care unit at Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital. John, 60, spent 8 days on the unit before being allowed to return to his home in Hamble. And he returned to work at the end of September, just 2 months after his near-death experience. He said, "If somebody saves your life, there is no way you can ever say thank you enough. I'm not one for sitting around, so I could not wait to get back to work, and it's really going well. All us porters are a bit like a family, but there is certainly a special bond between Daniel and me now. If he had not been there, it would have been a very different story, so I am very lucky that he was around on that night. I'm incredibly grateful to him, and I know that my family are as well." Daniel, 35, added, "When I think about what I was able to do for John, it really makes me proud. We come to work to make a difference and care for patients, and I really did make a difference that day. It just shows how important doing first aid courses can be. You never know when you're going to need to use the skills."
Winchester stands together in remembrance. Hundreds gathered to pay their respects at Winchester's annual Remembrance Day service. Members of the public marched from King Alfred's statue to the cathedral for the commemorations, and the grounds fell into a poignant silence at 11 a.m. to remember those who fought for their country. Wreaths were laid in front of the war memorial by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean, representatives of the Royal British Legion, and others from the armed services. John Page of the Army Reserves in the 7th Military Intelligence Regiment said, "It's coming up to the 100th anniversary of Armistice, and it is important we remember the people who died in both wars and also in the modern wars. The armistice was signed on November the 11th, 1918. It marked the end of 4 years of fighting during the First World War. Lieutenant Colonel Roger Mills, Deputy Commandant of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Army Cadet Force, added, "We need to pick up the torch from the older generation to make sure that we never forget their sacrifice." Civic leaders from across the county also gathered together to remember those who have fallen in battle last Friday at the start of Remembrance Weekend. Hampshire County councillors and council staff met at Winchester's War Memorial, with Chairman of the Council, Graham Burgess, leading the act of remembrance as a 2 minute silence was observed. Councillor Burgess said, "It is right that we take time to remember those individuals who paid the ultimate price in war, sacrificing their lives. Even though we naturally look back and reflect on past wars, it is important that we acknowledge the service and sacrifices still being made by our armed forces today, including those returning from combat, those who are injured on the front line, as well as the support they receive from loved ones, every single day. A wreath was laid with readings by reservists and ex-service members of County Council staff. Among the community leaders at the service was Councillor Andrew Joy, Cabinet Member for Communities, Partnerships and External Affairs. Our commitment in supporting our Armed Forces community, including regulars, reservists, veterans and their families, continues in many different ways, said Councillor Joy. We were one of the first local authorities to sign the Armed Forces Covenant, helping secure around £2 million in grants for over 50 projects across the county, benefiting service families and the wider local community. We have also been very proud of our long association with the Armed Forces. There are many photos here. The War Memorial with lots of red wreaths in front of it. People standing proudly of all ages. And one of Steve Brine paying his respects.
And here's a headline which is also a play on words. Jake Seals Place. Place is spelled P-L-A-I-C-E, which might give you a clue as to what the article's about. A Hampshire boy will be the youngest person ever to represent England at fly fishing. Jake Leake has been selected for the England Youth Fly Fishing Team 2018. The 12-year-old from Twyford secured a place in the squad of 14 after putting in a strong performance at the Greys England Youth Loch Style National held at Drake at Water in Warwickshire, landing two fish weighing a total of 4 pounds, 3 ounces. Speaking about the selection, Jake said he hadn't expected to be chosen and had entered the competition for experience, and added that he felt overwhelmed but also happy about being selected for the squad. Diana Porter, Jake's mum, said, "I'm proud and shocked. I've resigned myself to long weekends fishing at Drake at Manor, but most of all, I'm thrilled for Jake. The dedication of all these kids is incredible." Jake now has 6 weeks of training at Drakehead with former members of the youth team ahead of him before England takes on Scotland in the annual Trout Masters competition. And that's accompanied by a really charming photograph of 12-year-old Jake with a massive smile on his face holding up a beautiful dappled trout.
Thousands raised for Air Ambulance Fund. More than £100,000 has been raised for a Hampshire charity by people caught speeding on the county's roads. Staff from Hampshire Constabulary's Driver Awareness Training Team celebrated the new milestone of raising £115,000 for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance Fund. Since May 2012, the team has collected cash for the air ambulance by having donation pots in the training rooms and highlighting the work of the charity. The contributions have come directly from the attendees of the course, which is offered as an alternative to a fixed penalty after committing a road traffic offence. Bob Nicholas, senior trainer, said, "We are often shocked by the generosity of those that come on our driver awareness courses. It has been staggering. When we first started, I don't think any of us expected to collect as much as we have. It was one of our trainers that suggested it originally, and I think we all expected that we'd get a bit, but not a lot. But we've been absolutely bowled over by the generosity people have shown by what they've donated in the pots. Sometimes the pots are only at a venue for a week before they're full up. People often put £20 notes in. There have been on occasion several multiple notes put in by the same person. It's incredible, and we'd like to say thank you to all those who've contributed. On the course, there is a natural link to highlight Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Air Ambulance's invaluable work. At the start of the course, we talk about road death figures. The general trend is predominantly down, and we often ask the course attendees why they think that is. We introduce them to the fact that there's better medical care and that the air ambulance makes a huge difference to those crashes that happen remotely, where often a road ambulance could be travelling to and from the scene, and that crucial golden hour is gone. Rachel Lehman, head of income generation for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, said, "We are incredibly grateful to the Joint Operations Unit for the phenomenal sum that they have raised for us to date. It costs over £9,000 a day to keep our life-saving service operational. It is thanks to the generosity of the public and schemes such as this that we are able to keep the air ambulance flying and save lives."
MP picked chef for National Award. A Winchester chef has been nominated for a National Award thanks to the city's MP. James Swaffield, 29, head chef at Green's Bar and Kitchen in Jewellery Street, has been picked by Steve Brine, MP, as his nomination for the Parliamentary Pub Chef of the Year Award. Run by the British Beer and Pub Association and the All-Party Parliamentary Beer Group, James now faces an expert panel of judges for a place in the finals of the awards. Winchester-born and bred, James has been a chef for 14 years. He has worked in various restaurants and fine dining establishments throughout the UK, working his way up from scrubbing pots as a kitchen porter to his current position as head chef at Green's. On taking part in his first competition, James said, "I'm honoured and very excited. I have just recently been promoted to head chef at Green's and I'm starting to modernise the menu with a new team." Peter Neave, manager of Green's, said, "He's the future of where I want to take Green's, with a new, more dynamic menu and plenty of fresh ideas to take the pub forward." Steve Brine said, "I was delighted to nominate James for the award and wish him all the very best for the next stage of what is a national competition. Green's Bar and Kitchen have been in Winchester for more than 25 years. And there's a photo here of James Swaffield in his chef's uniform and also one of the frontage of Green's.
And here's another happy little story. New bed for ward. Volunteers with the Royal Hampshire County Hospital's Red Cross Trolley Shop have helped fund a new bed for the children's ward, which will allow parents to sleep alongside their poorly youngsters. The move by the volunteers was prompted by the words of a six-year-old girl on one of the Northbrook ward's feedback forms. She said, "I didn't cry at night because my mummy could sleep next to me in her bed." Jean Lee, the trolley shop manager, said, "We were blown away when we heard how much it was going to cost. But it isn't the sort of fold-away camp bed you'd keep up in the loft for when the grandkids come to stay. This bed must meet the NHS health and safety checks, and I must say, it does look extremely comfortable." She added, "A friend's daughter was recently rushed in for an emergency burst appendix operation, and Mum was given a bed for the 4 nights that her daughter stayed there. She said how good it was to be able to lie down and get some sleep." Alison Tate, the ward sister, said, "These beds are in constant use, and we're hoping to have 3 or 4, but the price was unexpectedly high. But we're more than grateful to have this extra one, as they are invaluable for the parents of children on the ward. They provide comfort and rest at a time when the family is perhaps tired and struggling with the stress of a sick child."
And this is a rather more serious item. Social Club counting the cost of burglary. Twyford Social Club has suffered a devastating break-in amounting to thousands of pounds worth of damage. Wall units were ripped out and doors smashed at the building on Queen Street, as well as a safe being stolen and the poppy appeal box emptied. The cost to repair the damage following the incident at around 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. on November the 8th is thought to be around £5,000. Manager Amy Walsh said, "We are a struggling community club that is non-profit making, and all of the work carried out to refurbish the property is voluntary." In a Facebook post, the club added, "No words can express how we feel about the soulless cowards who did this, but we'll bounce back. The club is currently crowdfunding and hopes to raise enough money to provide security shutters, CCTV and new doors and frames for the property. They have raised more than £1,000 towards the repairs so far. They will also be holding an under new management party on Friday, December the 1st, to continue their fundraising. Committee member Mike Sharp said, "It is formerly a working men's club, and we've recently been getting more members from all around the community. The only silver lining is that this has really galvanised the community." A Hampshire Constabulary spokeswoman said, "There was a forced entry of fire exit doors. A safe was stolen. We don't have the exact amount of money it contained. Attempts were made to remove a fruit machine, and the pool table was also tampered with."
Mayors thank residents for support following attacks. Residents of Winchester have been thanked for their books of condolence following the terrorist attacks at the Manchester Arena and Finsbury Park, London. Residents were thanked by the Lord Mayor of Manchester, Councillor Eddie Newman, and Islington London Borough Council leader, Councillor Richard Watts. The books were opened following the attacks on May the 22nd and June the 19th for the hundreds of local people wishing to express sadness at the events and write supportive messages intended for those affected. Situated in the Tourist Information Centre in the Guildhall and online, the books were signed by residents, visitors and representatives of Winchester businesses. Councillor Newman said, "I want to thank you, your colleagues and the citizens of Winchester for the condolence book received following the terror attack at Manchester Arena. It truly helped to know that the people of Manchester were in your thoughts during these difficult days, and we appreciate your friendship and concern. There is no doubt in my mind that Manchester will recover from this terrible tragedy and emerge a more resilient and cohesive city." Councillor Watts said, "I was touched by all the thoughtful messages of solidarity and condemnation. I am proud of the strength and determination the community of Islington has demonstrated in the wake of this hateful incident. The people of the borough and beyond have pulled together to show through their enormous support and concern for the victims that we do indeed have more in common than the things that divide us." Mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean, said, "All across the UK, people were deeply shocked by these incidents. As a community, Wintonians stand together with Mancunians and Londoners. Our gestures of support showed that local people wanted to reach out to those affected to assure them that they were not alone."
More than 100 jobs go at Building Company. More than 100 jobs are hanging in the balance after a Hampshire specialist building firm, which has been involved in several high-profile projects, went into administration. More than 100 jobs have already been lost at Winchester-based Lakesmere, which specialises in roofing, cladding and fascias, after the business ran into trouble following a number of, quote, unprofitable contracts. The company, which won the Queen's Award for Enterprise in 2015, went into administration last week and is making 109 out of 241 staff across the UK redundant. The company has worked on many landmark projects, including the O2 Arena in Greenwich, Southampton's new West Quay extension, and the Olympic Stadium in London. In 2015, the company, which had offices in Belfast, Glasgow, Manchester, Cannock, Newport, Reading and London, as well as Winall, reported a pre-tax profit of £3.5 million against an overall turnover of £118.5 million. Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester, said, "This is awful news and made worse by the timing right before Christmas. I've spent time at Lakesmere's HQ in Winall and been hugely impressed by the commitment of the team and the specialised skill set they have." Catherine Turness, Executive Director at the Winchester Business Improvement District, the BID, added, "It's deeply saddening to hear of this news. Our thoughts are with this staff during this difficult time. And that's accompanied by a photograph of the wonderful new extension to West Quay down in Southampton. Oddly enough, I was there earlier on this week and it is a beautiful building.
And this is on a more cheerful note. It's headed Flat Whites Expands. It's the popular Winchester coffee shop that provides artisan coffee and cakes from a quirky mobile pod in the city centre. And I think it's actually situated, well, I know it's situated, in a piece of road that runs between Jigsaw and what used to be Monsoon, but is now Pret-à-Manger. You've probably noticed it.
Now, on the way from the high street to the cathedral.
Yes, yes. It's a
Market Street.
Yes, it's a very interesting looking little sort of, well, pod with benches outside it. Now, Flat Whites on Market Street will soon be opening a new outlet at a more permanent location for coffee lovers to enjoy. The business, which currently operates out of a van, will be opening a brand new shop at 1 Stonemasons Court in Parchment Street. The unit is currently undergoing a refit ahead of the launch. The coffee outlet has been working with Goadsby Commercial to secure the new unit. The move to new premises will allow the company to hire 5 more staff, bringing their total to 15. So apparently they will continue in their present site, but they will have the other unit going as well. And it's illustrated by a picture of Abby Ewer, the owner of Flat Whites, standing behind the counter, and she's got a huge cauldron of homemade soup, says it's homemade on it, some delicious looking cakes and all the different kinds of coffee that they supply.
Well, you're doing a very good job of
advertising. You get a free coffee.
I think. Historic Vine Inn to be redeveloped. A former Stockbridge pub is to be given a new lease of life when it reopens as a retail and residential block next month. The 18th century coaching inn, the Vine Inn in the High Street, closed in 2012 and is now being replaced with a string of businesses, homes and parking in a development by DC Lye Builders. The Grade 2 listed building, to be called the Vine Yard, will now include 3 holiday apartments, a seamstress, hairdressers, estate agents, offices and stores for bridal wear, pianos and wine. Vine Pianos owner Deborah Barlow is looking forward to the Vineyard's grand opening on December the 1st. She said, "I suffered a serious horse riding accident last year, so I decided to use the opportunity to return to my formerly loved occupation as a piano tuner, which I'll be doing in Stockbridge's Vineyard. It's quite ironic that I'm now leasing a converted stable. One day I was talking about my love of riding and the beautifully converted stables, and DC Lye said to me, 'You wouldn't be opening Vine Pianos without having that riding accident.' He's right, and I'm so chuffed." Test Valley Borough Council approved the scheme with conditions for measures to safeguard sensitive habitats and species, such as the water vole, which live adjacent to the site. And there is a photograph of the Vine Inn at the Vine Inn looking rather unloved, and I'm sure it will be revamped by December the 1st.
Poppy display tributes. Children from a Winchester school contributed to a very special remembrance art installation. Pupils at Stanmore School created flowers of remembrance that formed a tribute to children who have died during war and conflict. The St Luke's Remembers project, held over the Remembrance weekend, proved to be a resounding success, as people of all ages descended on St Luke's Church in Winchester to view the installation of more than 2,000 flowers. On Remembrance Sunday, St Luke's was full for the annual service, which started with a parade of standards from the uniformed organisations and more than 70 young people, as well as more than 130 adults from the local community and further afield. During the service, parishioner Kay Hassel gave a talk to the young people about her uncle, who was a padre in the Second World War. He was killed in action but received the George Medal for his courage and support for others. Councillor Todd also gave a reading during the service, and there's a small photograph there of that show just a few of those 2,000 flowers arranged around the altar of St Luke's Church. Very moving.
Marwell getting into the festive spirit. Marwell Zoo is set to be transformed into a winter wonderland as Christmas fast approaches. To get into the festive spirit, the zoo will turn its Grade 1 listed Tudor manor house, Marwell Hall, into a number of fairy tale scenes. Visitors will first enter the magical winter forest, where they will be greeted with a glass of mulled wine or black currant and festive reindeer cookie before Mother Christmas gives a story reading. Families can then join the team of mischievous elves in their workshop, where little ones will create their very own Christmas Eve plate to take home. There will then be the opportunity to meet Father Christmas in his grotto for a photo. Visitors are advised to book in advance for the sessions, which run between November the 18th and Christmas Eve, and that's illustrated by a picture of the front of Marwell Hall with the elves in very colourful costumes jumping up in the air, and one of them seems to be sitting on what I think must be a penguin.
Advice service appealing for new volunteers. Around a dozen volunteers are being sought to help issue advice to residents in Winchester and Bishop's Waltham. Citizens Advice, which helps residents struggling with a range of problems, is looking for between 6 and 12 new volunteers to join in the Winchester district. It is an independent local charity and currently has over 60 volunteer advisers providing the backbone of their advice service. Natalie Webb, Chief Officer, said, "Our volunteer advisers do an amazing job helping over 6,000 people from all walks of life to resolve a huge variety of issues each year. One day they might be helping someone who's in serious financial hardship get the right benefits, and the next they might be giving advice to someone that has been unfairly treated at work. Citizens Advice are looking for people of all ages, backgrounds and experience to join. Training will begin in February and consist of 2 half days a week for around 12 weeks. Once trained, an advisor is expected to volunteer for 1 full day or 2 half days a week."
And here's an initiative taking place in Kingsworthy in the next few days. Residents to stage light switch off. While most homes use more power over the festive period with light displays for all the residents to see, people in one Winchester village will be bucking the trend for an evening and turning the lights off. Residents of Kingsworthy will be participating in the big switch off between 6 and 7 p.m. on Sunday, November the 19th, which will see locals signing up to use as little electricity as possible for an hour. The aim of the event is to get residents thinking about how much power they use on a daily basis. Over 65% of the electricity on the national grid is generated via fossil fuels, and in the winter this can be much higher. Residents have been using timers, slow cookers and eco settings on appliances to reduce the demand on peak electricity between 4 and 8 p.m. every evening. The project is being funded by energy industry regulator Ofgem through the Low Carbon Network Fund and delivered by Scottish and Southern Energy Power Distribution and Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINAC. Alison Skillen, community coach at WINAC, said, "The big switch off is a chance for the whole community to come together and demonstrate our collective power to work together. And it will make Kingsworthy an even stronger and more resilient community."
Remembering road victims. Those who lost their lives on the roads of Hampshire will be commemorated at a special ceremony held in Winchester this weekend. The Joint Operations Roads Policing Unit will be holding a special memorial service at Christ Church to support the family and friends of people who have died as a result of collisions on our roads. Sunday's ceremony, which begins at 2:30 p.m., is being held to mark the United Nations Day of Remembrance for Road Traffic Victims. Civic dignitaries and officers from the police, ambulance and fire services will join members of the public in an act of commemoration for the victims of traffic accidents in Hampshire. David Hardcastle, Assistant Chief Constable for the Joint Operations Unit, said, "We believe it is very important for us to come together with our emergency service colleagues and bereaved families to remember those tragically lost on our roads."
Festive fun from Woolley Hat Fair. Winchester's Hat Fair has revealed the details of its upcoming Christmas fun. After 2016's 12 Days of Christmas, Woolley Hat Fair has announced Fondly Imagined Christmases, starting on November the 30th. The event is organised by Hat Fair, the UK's longest-running outdoor arts festival, which takes place in Winchester during the first weekend in July. Among this year's events will be short pop-up outdoor performances, visual art installations and songs from local choirs all across the city centre. For full details, visit the Hat Fair website. And there's a photo of former Mayor Councillor Jane Rutter and a group of people wearing Santa hats, described as Woolley Hat Fair attendees, and they're all singing really enthusiastically, and I'm just wondering whether this will be one of the pop-up outdoor performances.
Waterworks at River Park. Swimmers at River Park Leisure Centre will be diving into much cleaner and clearer water from now on, following a £35,500 investment in new pool technology by Winchester City Council. The money has been used to improve the overall swimming provision at the centre and enhance the quality of water in both the main swimming pool and the learner pool. The enhancements have involved installing a new ultraviolet system which uses UV light to sanitise the swimming pool water. This means that the amount of chlorine required to keep the water clean and clear will be significantly reduced. Good news for swimmers who have sensitive skin and eyes. Councillor Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for Health and Wellbeing, said, "I am so pleased that we're able to offer leisure centre customers a better swimming experience. This investment in the leisure centre will improve both the air and water quality, resulting in a more comfortable swim for everyone." Anti-wave lane ropes have also been fitted to the main pool to improve the swimming experience and reduce disturbances in the water. A giant inflatable is also available at specific times in the centre. Stuart Urquhart, General Manager at River Park Leisure Centre, said, "We're really pleased that this investment will enhance our customers' swimming experience and hope that it will inspire even more people to be active and enjoy the sessions on offer." And sure enough, there's a lovely photograph there. Looks like a swimming gala of some sort, because there's people happily splashing up and down in the water, watched and no doubt cheered on by a large crowd.
Call to create safer city cycling routes. Around 100 people came together to discuss how cycling can be made safer in Winchester following the launch of a major transport consultation. Organised by Winchester CTC, a local cycling group, the Taking Cycling Seriously, meeting at the United Church in Jury Street, saw residents and campaigners come together to discuss ideas, including priority for cyclists and pedestrians and contraflow cycling. Sue Cole from the Winchester Cycle Working Group said, "It was great to see how many people who had a real opportunity to say what they wanted. It shows the level of support for changes that encourage people to get out of their cars and cycle." The meeting called for safer, more effective and more attractive cycling routes into the city, especially for commuters. It also called for more cycle training and a change in attitude so that employers and traders see cycling as a good way to increase trade and help their workforce. The meeting follows the launch of the Winchester Movement Strategy, which is consulting residents on how best to manage traffic and pedestrian flows around Winchester. The consultation, launched jointly by Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council, started last month and runs until December the 8th. The council say they want to hear views on how to achieve the right balance between different types of traffic, how best to support growth and economic vibrancy, improving air quality, and any other issues which are important to residents. Representatives from the Taking Cycling Seriously meeting will now meet the councils to discuss the ideas in more detail.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Cheerio.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye and do have a good week. And please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. When you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you and goodbye.